There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit nfl.com/schedule-release to learn more.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg, and this is The Deciding Decade. It is the day after Election Day, and we've been watching returns and news from across the country closely, maybe a little too closely for our own good. So I thought it'd be good to use this time to zoom out just for a moment and talk about the next presidency in a broader context, thinking about what this election means as a moment in our history, what we can learn from the past, and what all of this will mean for the road ahead. And my guest today has a lot of expertise on exactly this. Jonathan Alter is a critically acclaimed author and journalist whose work you've probably seen in publications like Newsweek, Bloomberg, or The Daily Beast, or whose New York Times best-selling books on Presidents FDR and Barack Obama might have made their way to your bookshelf. His new book is entitled His Very Best, Jimmy Carter, A Life. He has won many awards and recognitions for his work and is widely viewed as an expert on presidential politics and leadership. Jonathan, welcome. Let me begin just by asking, since you've covered many presidential elections, do you have a ritual for Election Day and watching the returns? And has that ritual survived this unusual election year?
First of all, thanks, Pete, so much for having me on. I'm honored to be on your podcast today, of all days. So in the past, what I've done is gone on fly-arounds on Election Day. So I did it with Bill Clinton in 92 and Al Gore in 2000, and then with Barack Obama in 2008. And that's where you get on the press plane and you stay out all night, the night before the election. You know, you go to all these airport hangars as the candidate crisscrosses the country. And then by the time you get back, you know, to the candidate's home state, pretty much what everybody does is the candidate goes and votes and reporters go to the hotel and we try to take a nap to get ready for election night. You know, with COVID, I haven't been actively covering either campaign, although I have covered it from afar. So my routine was to try to take a nap so I could snap, and I failed. Because I think mostly because I was so kind of nervous about the whole thing. And then I didn't sleep much last night
either.
So whatever ritual I had was completely thrown out the window.
I think that's most of us this time around. Your new book is about Jimmy Carter. I'm looking forward to talking about that, but not yet, because I have been devouring your first book, The Defining Moment, about the 100 days of FDR. And it strikes me that a lot of people looking for something to compare this moment to are thinking about the moment when FDR arrived in office, an economic crisis, democracy being called into question, a dramatic rift between the outgoing president and the incoming president. And as we head toward a likely Biden presidency, and really, no matter what, if you think about the historical circumstances, I'm wondering, as an expert on those first 100 days, first of all, do you think observers had been right to point to that as the closest thing we have to a template for what 2021 will look like? Or do you think that it's wide of the mark and not really the right comparison, if one even exists?
Well, I think history is always useful, but it doesn't repeat itself. It rhymes. That's not original to me. So there are elements of what happened in the dismal winter of 1932-33 that are very relevant to today. And they were also very relevant to the 2008-2009 winter. So it's understandable for people who might be approaching this situation to try to get some perspective. And what is really quite similar is that the country feels that it's in some kind of crisis. And I think what spoke to Biden about the comparison, and in the book, Walter Lippmann, who was the preeminent columnist of the day, had a stature beyond what any single columnist has nowadays. And he went to Roosevelt, who he had sort of derided as a lightweight playboy, you know, not really a very good candidate, was nominated on the fourth ballot in 1932. And he said, "Franklin, I think you may have to assume dictatorial powers." And the word dictator had a positive connotation in 1932-33. Studebaker, which I think was an Indiana auto company, right?
That's right. Yeah, right in South Bend, in my hometown.
They had a car called the Dictator. It actually sold pretty well. And Mussolini had been in power for about a decade, and he was popular in the United States. And the New York Daily News, which was the biggest newspaper of the day, printed this headline, "Wanted a Dictator."
Wow.
So democracy is fragile. And we've learned this under Donald Trump. It's a fragile flower. And we just saw last night what Trump did in the East Room. It was outrageous. You know, he was taking on the essence, the core of our system, which is that the people decide, and elections are the very core of our democracy. So in that sense, in the same way that democracy was sort of on the table, there's a real comparison. And then you mentioned the fact that there was this very tense interregnum between the outgoing president, Herbert Hoover, who, unlike Trump, you know, didn't fail to concede, and, you know, he observed the niceties, but he and Roosevelt had a very, very chilly encounter shortly before the inauguration, where Roosevelt's son said he felt like punching Hoover when they rode down Pennsylvania Avenue together, which, by the way, I don't believe Trump will do with Biden. They rode silently, and the only words that they exchanged were, at one point, Roosevelt looked out the window and said, "Nice steel." He was looking at the construction of the new Department of Commerce. And the two men never spoke after that, even though they had been good friends in the early 1920s. So Biden and Trump were never good friends. And I think that the bad feeling there greatly exceeds what happened in 1932-33. But there are some similarities. And then the similarities to the Obama transition is that the economy just tanked in the fourth quarter of 2008. And so Obama was facing a crisis that was quite similar to what Roosevelt faced. And if they hadn't put through the stimulus, we would have hit the 25% unemployment by the fall that Roosevelt faced. The progressives in 1933 wanted Roosevelt to take over the banks in the same way that progressives in 2009 wanted Obama to take over at least Citibank. And in both cases, Roosevelt and Obama chose the more moderate course, and the banks were brought back to health by Roosevelt and Obama. And I think that next year, especially with the Senate likely not going Democratic, I think that Biden will pursue a more moderate course. And he has a lot of experience dealing with Mitch McConnell. And progressives are going to be unhappy about it, but are going to have to understand that even Roosevelt, you know, compromised. He wasn't going to just jam through some fixed idea of what needed to happen.
So I think one of the reasons that expectations have been so high on the progressive side right now is this sense that, you know, we're not just talking about switching control of the White House from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party, but really that we might be at a moment of transformation in the cycles of history. I think a lot about what kind of era we might be entering into. One of the things that struck me as I was returning to some of what you wrote about President Obama is this is what a lot of people thought in 2008, right? That there was this kind of Reagan era, began in 1980, ran its course and came to an end with the dawning of a new, widely felt, perhaps irreversible progressive turn that President Obama's arrival represented. Obviously, that didn't quite happen. And I think in some ways now, looking at the constraints that surrounded President Obama, he was still in many ways operating in the sort of realities that had begun with Ronald Reagan. So then there's this impatience to say, okay, well, now 40 years since then, surely this is the outset of something new. If those hopes are disappointed, is there anything in your study of history that suggests what might happen next? I mean, suppose that a President Biden is confronted with high expectations about what's about to change, coupled with just the pressure of these huge historical crises, economic crisis, public health crisis, something of a crisis in the way the U.S. is perceived in the world. What's it going to take to rise to that? And what's the relationship of pragmatism and boldness in a season like this?
Well, he has to be bold. But the question is how people react to the sausage making, the inevitability of compromise. And Obama liked to use this expression, don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. And this is something that, unfortunately, progressives sometimes do. I remember in late 2009, I got mostly on MSNBC, Keith Olbermann's old show, if you remember that, like time after time, Keith would have me and Howard Dean on. And Howard Dean, the former chair of the Democratic Party, presidential candidate in 2004, he was saying of the Affordable Care Act, quote unquote, kill the bill. To me, this was like insane and almost a insult to the practice of politics, which is the art of the possible. And here we had a chance to protect people and end the horrible era where you had to sell your house or declare personal bankruptcy if you or someone in your family got sick. And progressives have been trying for this since 1912. Since the Bull Moose Party platform of Theodore Roosevelt.
Wow.
And here it was within sight, but because there wasn't a public option, a lot of progressives wanted to, quote, kill the bill. And of course, if they'd killed the bill, and they came very close, then we would have nothing now. We would have no Affordable Care Act, and we would have a huge number more of uninsured. So what I worry about with 2021 and 2022 is that because of all this energy in the progressive movement that did not get a transforming election, we just have to face that fact. This is not a transforming election. They will be frustrated and they will not, you know, read the realities properly. But having said that, Pete, very quickly, Biden should act as if he does have a mandate. And this is something that Republican presidents have been better at doing the Democratic president. So, you know, I was in Florida in the aftermath of 2000. George W. Bush had lost the popular vote. They really, to my mind, they stole Florida. That's a whole other story. But he acted as if he'd won in a landslide. And this is something that I think Biden should, assuming that he takes office, which I think is a reasonable assumption, should propose a very bold, very progressive agenda. And I think he will. It's just what happens after that. It's the willingness of progressives and other Democrats to take half a loaf. And I think what's happening right now is a little bit unfortunate. I understand why Democrats are so disappointed, because we wanted to think Trump was a fluke, that he was an assault on our constitutional principles, and that he would be repudiated. That did not happen. What Joe Biden accomplished, if he goes on to win, is very rare. I mean, in the 20th century, it was only Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Jimmy Carter against a president who hadn't been elected, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton. That's it. Since the beginning of the 20th century, it's hard to unseat an incumbent president.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
One thing that I was thinking about as you were describing the narrow path that the Affordable Care Act took and how close we were to it not making it is also how much dramatically changed in terms of the political life of the ACA. My first experience on the ballot was 2010. I was a Democrat in Indiana. Not a fun time to be a Democrat on the ballot, pretty much anywhere, especially in a conservative state like mine. We were getting killed over Obamacare. There were these town hall meetings where Democratic congressmen were getting yelled at. We were hearing about death panels. I mean, it was brutal. And of course, paid a heavy price for that in the midterms. The thing that amazed me is a few years later, you go to 2018, definitely today, this is the winning issue for Democrats. You know, the policy was implemented. It worked. It hasn't been perfect, hasn't solved every problem, but it's way better than not having it, which is why removing it was the central pledge of domestic Republican policy, really. They've never been able to do it and in many ways gave up trying legislatively. Of course, the courts are another matter. So I wonder, as you fit that kind of arc to other things we've seen in history and other things that might be instructive to a Biden administration, how should we think about that pathway in the the life of a policy. Social Security might be another example. Absolutely untouchable. Do not mess with Social Security. And yet, of course, there was a controversy in getting it up and running in the first place. And I wonder if even FDR could have envisioned how enduring of a policy win it would be. So how do we think about something that might be unpopular or even toxic today, but that's going to be just bedrock that maybe saves us in the future? And is there any way in advance to know which of your policies is which? Or is it simply hoping and trusting that the American people are going to believe in this policy that you're putting through as much as they do, and that you'll be rewarded for it eventually?
So this is such an important question that you're raising, I think, especially for progressives to think about when they consider theories of change. So I have a chapter in the Roosevelt book about Social Security. Roosevelt didn't think at the beginning, in his first 100 days, before he had successful midterms, he didn't think he could lay that on the American public. Didn't think he could make the sale because it was such a big change. And Frances Perkins, the first woman ever to serve in the cabinet as labor secretary, had been urging him to do it. And he said, no, we can't do it now. First, we have to lay the groundwork. So then they did it. But the important thing to understand is that the original Social Security Act of 1935 was not a good piece of legislation. It was basically racist. In order to get the votes of Southern Democrats, they carved out any occupation held by an African American. And you know, that was the only way to get it through. But what Roosevelt understood was that if you implanted certain things in it, you could make it permanent and that it could be fixed later. So for instance, he had it funded by a payroll tax. He didn't want it funded out of general revenues. He said, I want to put in a tax that no damn politician can take it away without going into the payroll tax. So he set it up as like a trust fund, which it really isn't, but he set it up in a complicated way that made it hard to unwind. And then he waited and expected that it would have to be fixed. And I think since 1935, Social Security has been fixed and improved on six different occasions by the Congress. First, all the Republicans were against it the way they were Obamacare. And a lot of the 1936 campaign was about Social Security. And basically, employers put in the pay envelopes of almost every worker something that said, if you vote for Franklin Roosevelt, your paycheck is going to be less under Social Security. Actually, it wouldn't be until 1940 that they started to phase it in. And the American people overwhelmingly rejected that because by that time they trusted Roosevelt to look after their interests. Now, that's leadership if you can get people to do that. Same thing happened with Medicare. And 1965, it was not nearly as inclusive a program when Lyndon Johnson got it through. Same thing with the Immigration Act of 1965. People need to understand if Biden can put any points on the board on some of these transformative ideas, you don't have to get the whole thing. Because when you give the American people something good, they don't want to take it away. That's why Obamacare is so popular now, because they realize it's giving them protection that they need. And I think there are a whole series of other things, a lot of which are in Biden's program, that he can do. And even if he gets them done in watered down form, he should be celebrated for that, getting anything accomplished. And this is one of the things that happened to Jimmy Carter, is that he got all of this legislation through, but the Democratic Party was so cynical about him in the post-Watergate period that he'd have these bill signing ceremonies that they would just yawn. The press wouldn't even go. And I asked some reporters, do you remember something called PERPA? And they go, no. These were good reporters from the 70s, White House reporters. No. What was that again? They all remember like Lust in My Heart, Jimmy Carter saying that. And they remember he's attacked by a killer rabbit when he's in a canoe. None of them knew what PERPA was. I said, well, it was the bill that allowed public utilities to use alternative energy for the first time, like might be a little bit important for the future of the United States, you know? And there were like dozens of those bills in the Carter administration. They got no attention. So one of the things that worries me is that when Biden does make compromises with Mitch McConnell and they get something through, that everybody's going to be bitching about those compromises rather than celebrating that they got the nose under the tent for major change.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
So in a scenario where it is Mitch McConnell and there's a Republican Senate majority, or at the very least, there's not a reliable Senate vote for a lot of Joe Biden's agenda, what effect do you think that'll have on the Republican Party? Do they just remain a minority rule organization or even a bad faith organization committed to in the Senate to stopping anything from getting done, as seems to have been a priority in 2010 during the Obama administration? Or do they have an incentive to find some way to cooperate and help deliver something, if not what what we would hope to see on the progressive side?
So I don't have a really great answer to that. You know, in 2009, on the night of the Obama inauguration, the Republican leadership, they all met at a restaurant and they said, look, this guy's really popular. We just have to stop him. We have to be really disciplined and we can't let him get anything through. Now, Obama had, at that time, he had 59 Democratic senators. So it was a little bit of a different situation. And McConnell is a famous obstructionist, but you know, I noticed this Fox exit poll yesterday, and on all of the issues that, say, you talked about, you know, whether it was climate change, response to COVID, the whole list of issues, large numbers of people who voted for Donald Trump supported the Democrats on these issues. And I think there might be some Republicans who are smart enough to get that. And, you know, Biden would only need to pick off one or two of them in the Senate. And you go, well, there are no moderates anymore, you know. But, you know, you might be able to get a Lisa Murkowski on this vote. And so take something like infrastructure. Mm-hmm. The people, a lot of the people who voted for Trump, they were in a, you know, what I see as a cult of personality. They, like Trump himself, he was always talking about infrastructure week, right? McConnell is really against that. He just has a problem with infrastructure. But I think he could be beaten on that and a number of other things. And there's certain a number of very important things that Biden can do unilaterally, like reentering the Paris Climate Agreement and renewing certain other international agreements and starting to repair our relations with our allies. And you could go right down the list of many things he can do without Mitch McConnell. But I think what's really important is that he have a few quick victories, even if they don't seem to be that big and don't please progressives, because wins build on wins. And then he starts to get the reputation of a successful president, and he can, you know, down the road do other things like your ideas on the Supreme Court. He can take the commission report after 180 days and say, well, let's craft some bipartisan legislation on this. But it's really important that he dig in and act as if he has a mandate. Otherwise, he could get rolled.
Right.
Obama would always send him to the Hill, because he knew the Senate much better, to do all the negotiating. Almost all the bills that Obama got through, the short strokes, were negotiated by Joe Biden. One of the things that Rosalynn Carter told me that I found really interesting, she is an extraordinarily formidable woman and was a very close advisor to her husband, is that shortly before the inauguration, they withdrew the nomination of Theodore Sorensen, the great Kennedy aide and speechwriter, to be director of the CIA. Now, that was the wrong job for him. He'd been a conscientious objector in World War II. There were all sorts of reasons why it was a mistake to have nominated him, but they should have stuck with him. And they shouldn't have withdrawn the nomination just because people
politically, you mean,
a lot of noise. So Biden really has to ignore the noise that the Republican echo chamber is great at generating and just say, I'm going to tune all that out. I don't care what they're saying on Twitter. I don't care what Donald Trump, private citizen, is saying. And
which is going to be a thing, right? There's going to be just because he's no longer president doesn't mean he wouldn't be able to create an enormous amount of noise and summon a following to amplify that, right?
Yes, but this is really, really important. Democrats should just basically ignore it. I mean, Jimmy Carter got into many controversies with his successors, and he would go after them in ways, but it wasn't on the front page, you know? I mean, it wasn't like the guy's a private citizen. He likes to spout off about what he doesn't like about Bush or often Democratic presidents. It shouldn't be big news when Trump does that. Now, obviously, Fox will make it big news, but I think everybody else should, if not put him on radio silence, recognize that former presidents don't have any power. This is one of the things that bugs me about people when they say, Jimmy Carter, bad president, great ex-former president. No. As a former president, he's done some great stuff on eradicating and getting worm disease and supervising elections, but he has no power. You know, there's a huge difference between being president and not being president in terms of what you can actually do.
But isn't it true that he transformed the ex-presidency? Up until Jimmy Carter, no one was active in the way he, or perhaps we haven't heard about it.
And it's been inspirational what he's done. And I could go on all day about that. He revolutionized the vice presidency. He was the first one to give the vice president anything significant to do. Then he revolutionized the role of the first lady, took it way beyond what Eleanor Roosevelt had done. And then when he left office, he revolutionized the post-presidency. But I'm just saying that when Trump doesn't have any power, he should be treated as just another loudmouth TV host. Hmm. You know, he certainly doesn't deserve to be treated with the reverence that some people think a former president should be accorded. I don't think we owe him that.
That's an important discipline we're going to have to remember on the road ahead. Well, one other thing I was curious about, as a new president, likely a President Biden takes office, you've covered politics and really every president in different ways for decades, but in particular have learned so much about FDR, about President Obama, and about Jimmy Carter. I wonder if there's one quality that you would advise an incoming president to remember or to learn from each of those three presidents that you know so much about.
In terms of Obama, I think Joe Biden certainly doesn't need any of my advice on what to learn from him. I wrote a piece about him and Obama and their relationship in 2016. And they had this kind of secret code where Obama didn't want the people in the room to just try to curry favor with him by picking up on something that he said and then just echoing it, right? So he had this unspoken deal with Biden that when he leaned forward. That was the signal to Biden to jump in on one side of the debate so that Obama didn't have to. So I think from FDR, it would be a spirit of optimism, lifting people's spirits. This is just so extraordinarily important. And I think that from Jimmy Carter, it would be very much in line with Joe Biden's campaign. His campaign and Carter's, his 76 campaign, had a lot in common. Carter was campaigning right after Watergate. So it was about the soul of America in many ways. And I would strongly encourage Biden to continue that, to continue to talk about decency and to set a high moral tone and not give up on that. And there is an integrity agenda that the country needs now. And I would urge Biden to stay focused on that.
Sitting here today, we know that we are close to closing the chapter on the Trump presidency and beginning a new one. A Joe Biden presidency will inevitably be one of great consequence. Yet there's a complicated road even to getting to Inauguration Day, as we already see the president attack the process itself. Jonathan was full of insights about how we can learn from the past, but he also reminded us why the past can't always tell us what to expect in the future. We know that the path ahead will be unpredictable, but what is cut across in the story of each of these presidents is the role of their personal leadership and how that can offer focus and discipline for us all, something we're going to need in the months and years to come. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
To hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV, and be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.